Up next, we're happy to welcome to the program guitarist, lead singer for a band that's been making great music now since 1966. Countless awards and hits through the years. You know them for songs like Mr. Bojangles, Fishing in the Dark, Dance Little Jean, American Dream with Linda Ronstadt, the great Will the Circle Be Unbroken album. We're talking, of course, about the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. Their new album is so good, out just last week, called Dirt Does Dylan. We are happy to be joined by the Dirt Band's Jeff Hanna. Jeff, thank you so much for being with us.
Man, thanks. Good talking to you.
Yeah, good talking to you. But I've been a fan of your music for so long, and this new album is just terrific. I have to think, too, it's on the one hand, when you're doing Dylan covers, you got a lot to choose from, but it's also a pretty daunting task because there is so much of his music to choose from there.
Well, yeah, there is a lot. I mean, he's written hundreds of great songs, and our kind of agenda with this was to try to find stuff that, A, you know, for starters, they're all good. It's Dylan, right? So, you know, you have this embarrassment of riches when it comes to the material. But in our case, we started with a long list, about 80 songs. By the time we made it to the studio, that was down to like 30 or 40. Then we started just sort of running them, sitting around in a circle with acoustic guitars and just, playing them, singing before we, you know, went to our little positions in the room to start actually recording. And the songs kind of found us, you know. It was sort of like these tunes came to us, the ones that really suited our band the best. So that's kind of how we got there with it. You know, again, some of these tunes go back to the 60s, some of them into the 70s, you know, and it wasn't by any design that we ended up really referencing that particular period of Bob Dylan's writing. But that's where we went with it.
Well, how we got there. I love the fact that there is some unexpected treats on there. Country Pie, man, that was awesome. And it's a great version of it.
Thank you so much. Well, you know, you may know or not know that our band started as a jug band.
I did know that, yeah.
So a lot of our fans came along later after Mr. Bojangles became a hit, and our band was known more as sort of a Southern California country rock outfit. But before that, we played jug band music, which has this sort of ragtime, blues, skiffle band kind of vibe to it. And our keyboard player, Bob Carpenter, suggested that tune. I thought, it was brilliant. It was really fun. I should point out that we recorded that song live around one microphone. So it was really, really old timey, as they say.
You guys were, what was one of the original names? Was the Illegitimate Jug Band?
Well, actually, that was my high school band that I had before the Dirt Band. My buddy Bruce Kunkel, who was actually one of the original members in our band, he and I had this, we had this jug band, but we didn't have a jug player, so we called it the Illegitimate Jug Band.
I also love that you got Quinn the Eskimo, the Mighty Quinn, on there, and a terrific version of it, too.
Oh, thanks, man. I appreciate that. You know, that's it's a pretty iconic song of Bob's, one that, you know, I mean, the famous version of it, of course, was by Manfred mm-hmm. Mann. Back in the 60s. But we always loved that song. We would play that at sound check sometimes or throw it in at the end of a night for an encore or something. But it's got I love the chorus. It's a real joyful kind of a vague lyric like Dylan's famous for sometimes. But a lot of fun.
And you got some great collaborators too on The Times They Are a Changing. My goodness, what an all-star cast. Our friend Roseanne Cash, Jason Isbell, Steve Earle. Did you have to pull some strings to get Matresa Berg on this too?
Matresa Berg was the hardest one to get on that. You can tell them.
Matresa Berg is, of course, Jeff's wife. So yeah, but still may have required some persuasion.
Well, you know what didn't require any persuasion? I should point this out, by the way. We recorded the track for Times Are a Changing right before the country went into lockdown back in March of second week of March, 2020. So when we got in to add the guest vocalists, our band was scattered to the winds. Our keyboard player, Bob, was out in Los Angeles where he lives. Our drummer, harmonica player, Jimmy Fadden, was in Florida. So after Roseanne recorded her verse, Matresa came in and sang harmony with Roseanne. She loves Roseanne and they're friends. But she also played the Bob Dylan style harp. Matresa is a really good harmonica player. We had to ask Jimmy Fadden's permission, of course, because he's an iconic harp. But he loves Matresa. And he said, sure thing. You know, she does that really well. It was, those folks are so great. The Warren Treaty, Michael and Tanya Trotter, Steve Earle, of course, Jason Isbell. They're such wonderful folks. And I admire them as much as people as I do for their work. I mean, they're brilliant artists, all of them. Great writers, great singers, but they're also really great human beings. And that was a serious pleasure getting to sing with them.
How did you get together with Larkin Poe?
Well, that's an interesting story. We, the Lovell sisters, Rebecca and Megan Lovell, they had a bluegrass band when they were kids with their sister. It was called the Lovell sisters. And when their older sister retired from the road, they went on as a duo. And I believe it's their great grandfather or great, great grandfather was named Larkin Poe. So that's where they got the name. We were touring with them back in 2010, I believe. And we struck up this friendship. I mean, they're really, really great. And they started in bluegrass. Now they're a seriously hard rocking band. I mean, their band is great, but it's serious, deep rock and roll. Rebecca plays electric guitar and Megan plays lap steel guitar. We'd stayed in touch all these years, and back, I don't know, I guess a few months into lockdown when we started talking about finishing up some of these tunes, my co-producer, Ray Kennedy, who's a great producer, by the way, does Lucinda Williams and Steve Earle as well. We started talking about bringing in somebody else to sing on I Shall Be Released. Bob Carpenter had already done his vocal on it. So, I brought up Larkin Poe. I thought that would be great to have them on there. We sent them the track. They loved it and came in and just, you know, they were very well prepared, came in and did a wonderful job. And I love what they did on the second verse, Rebecca singing and Megan coming in and harmonizing with her. Then Megan just burned it up on that lap steel guitar as well. They're super cool. I'm a huge fan of theirs.
We're talking with Jeff Hanna of Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. The new album is Dirt Does Dylan. Every cut on this album is stellar, but I think my favorite is your interpretation of Girl from the North Country.
Oh, thank you, man. Musically, as a piece of music, that's one of my favorite things we've ever done, honestly. My son Jamie sang lead on that, by the way. Jamie started playing in our band. He and our buddy Ross Holmes, who plays fiddle and mandolin, the two of them came on board in 2018. So this is our first record with those guys. We just got in the studio and started playing it. And Ross had this gorgeous mandolin figure worked out. Bob Carpenter was playing accordion. And it's just cinematic to me. It's this beautiful, almost Celtic sort of scene that those guys paint musically. And then Jamie plays that really groovy electric guitar on the outro as well. Thank you for that, though. That's one of my all-time favorites. I'm not biased, but, you know.
Do you remember the first time you saw Dylan live?
Oh, yeah. I was in high school. I grew up in Long Beach, California, and Bob Dylan came and played at a high school that was right across town from where I lived. Me and my girlfriend and a bunch of our buddies went to see him play. Somebody sent me a picture of the poster a few months ago, and it was like, I think it was $3 to get in, $4 at the door. You know, adjusted for inflation, of course.
Right.
And some zeros. But man, that was such a huge thing for a 17-year-old kid to see this guy. That, you know, he was probably 20 or his early 20s, I'm guessing. I think he's about 5 years older than I am. And he, 6 years, I think. Yeah. So he would have been 23, 24, maybe. He's just incredible. And it was great seeing him. Is right at the tail end of before he went electric. So he came out on the stage with his acoustic guitar, his Gibson guitar, and his harmonica rack. And You know, I remember really clearly. He had a cool suede jacket on, and you know, he was a hip cat. You know, I think that I always felt like he brought this, you know, folk music, the folk music that we got into, and it starting in the early 60s and then continuing through our lives. Back then, a lot of our heroes were folks from a generation or two before us. So Dylan happens on the scene, and he's like this, you know, he could have been in the Beatles. He brought this great sort of youthful sensibility and energy to the whole scene without, and he was very clearly influenced by some of the greats like Woody Guthrie and Ramblin' Jack Elliott, Pete Seeger, folks like that. But man, he was so cool, and he still is.
Speaking of legends, we're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Will the Circle Be Unbroken, that landmark album of yours. You guys were so young at the time. Were you maybe too young to be intimidated by the group of people and legends that you were working with on that project?
Yeah, kind of young and dumb, right? I mean, it was, we were, I think that we were kind of a little bit in shock that we were in a room in a recording studio with folks that we had stared at their album covers, you know, as growing up, and just amazed that, you know, Earl Scruggs and Doc Watson and Maybelle Carter would want to get in the studio and make a record with us. So, I mean, you know, of course we were intimidated, but I also think we were inspired so much that it raised our game. You know, it was like, better not screw up. Here we are in a room with these legends, you know. So, and they were so gracious and totally, I mean, their collective senses of humor were so, oh man, you know, they made it real easy. There was a lot of, you know, cutting up and they were just wonderful folks. They all felt like family to us, you know, lucky us.
Ken Burns is a great friend of our show, and he comes on every time he's got a new film. And I so loved his country music documentary and some of the footage from those sessions. It was so powerful.
Oh, man, we were so honored to be part of that. I just thought the whole country music series was incredible. Mm. And my buddy John McEwen and I both got to do a little interview, talking head spot on that. He really did a great job. He and Dayton Duncan, yeah. I just love both those guys. They're so cool. I'm always look forward to whatever they may have cooking. And they've always got something cooking. But yeah, they were super respectful of the whole scene. And it was very humbling to be part of that.
Well, you guys have done this so long, and you and Jimmy have been together since, what, 1966? Bob Carpenter's been with the band since the mid-70s, and you guys not just keep going, but you're not just playing the hits. You're out there making new music and constantly reinventing yourselves. And I think that you were one of the first groups to really cross genres or not even care about genres.
Well, you know, when we started, it's funny, back in the, you know, back in my day, back in the 60s, the radio, FM radio, was kind of a brand new thing, you know, and it was very non-genre specific. I remember there was a favorite station of mine, of ours in LA, I think it was KPFK, that, you know, late night FM radio, you could hear Flatten Scruggs 1 second, and the next album would be a cut from Jimi Hendrix. It was just all over the map. And I always loved that freeform radio, right? We live in a world now that it's, we are, you know, in genres and subgenres and sub-subgenres. And so things are kind of, you know, divvied up. I think, you know, I understand the concept. I get it. If you really like a certain thing, if you're, you know, whether you're streaming something or trying to find something on the radio dial, it's all, you want to kind of go where your tribe is. But it's fun, I think, to have it kind of, the unexpected, I think, is always a real pleasure, you know, something new. But yeah, we've always kind of divided. We've always sort of, you know, defied genre categorization, as they say. Sometimes it's worked for us and sometimes not. But I think that, you know, it's always, my favorite artists have always been folks like you know, the Beatles, for example, from cut to cut on their albums, they sometimes sounded like a different band. Bob Dylan's a great example, from song to song, from record to record, depending on what era.
What did Mr. Bojangles do for you guys?
Oh man, it changed our lives. I mean, that song kind of found us. I heard a little snippet of it on the radio driving home from a rehearsal back in the late fall of 1969. We were working on this record called Uncle Charlie and His Dog Teddy, and I didn't hear the whole song, but like, you know, late night FM, they didn't back announce, and I had no idea who the artist was. Turned out it was Jerry Jeff Walker, but I walked in the rehearsal the next day and tried to describe the song to the guys. And one of my buddies, Jimmy Ibbotson, who was with us back then, said, "I know that song." And he had a scratched up 45 RPM single of Jerry Jeff singing that song in the trunk of his car. So we found a record player and stacked a bunch of pennies on the needle so it would track. We could actually play it. Recorded it thinking that, you know, that was the art piece. We figured this is this great 4-minute song, but it was a waltz. It was a song about an old guy and his dog. And it's like, is that a hit? Probably not, but we just love the song. So of course, what do we know? It became a huge hit for us. And really, honestly, it was Bojangles that really got us on the road, really on the road. I mean, we had toured some. You know, we had a top 40 hit with a song called Buy For Me the Rain back in 67, but there was a big gap between Buy For Me the Rain and Bojangles. And by the time we got to that Uncle Charlie record, we were kind of ready. We were kind of ready to get out there and see the world. So we toured all over the States and eventually, you know, Japan, Russia, and all over the world.
I was doing country radio when you guys had the phenomenal string of country hits, My God, Fishing in the Dark and Dance Little Jean. I mean, for my money, two of the best country songs of the last 50 years.
Oh, thanks, man. I really appreciate that. Country music was really, really good to us. We, you know, it's a little ironic that, you know, as far as like in terms of the style of music we were playing, when we came to Nashville to start making records, we recorded Will the Circle Be Unbroken here in 71, but, you know, that was kind of a one-off.
Right.
We've still been doing most of our recording in Los Angeles or Colorado after that. But when we came down here and started making records in earnest for country music, I think the first of those albums came out in 83. We were amazed at, you know, the landscape of country radio had changed to where it felt a lot like that Southern California country rock we were playing back in the early 70s. So we didn't have to really change. We didn't have to really change much to fit. I think because of Will the Circle Being Broken, though, the country music community really accepted us. We were very fortunate in that regard, you know, being able to, you know, close the door to rock and roll and open one to country music.
And you'd also had success on the pop charts with a couple of terrific collaborations, working with Nicolette Larson and, of course, with Linda Ronstadt.
Oh, those were two of my favorite things we ever did. I love Linda so much, and I actually got to play in her band for a brief period back in 69. And Nicolette was so great. We loved Nicolette. She was such a sweetheart. Yeah, I was on Make a Little Magic with Nicolette. They were back-to-back singles. I think for a time people thought, oh, it's the Dirt Band and guest female artist, you know. And boy, were they great, both of them.
But the collaboration that people may not be aware of is that you guys were also on another hit record as the Toot Uncommons. You were Steve Martin's backup band when he did King Tut.
That's correct, yes. Actually, it was me and the guys that were our rhythm section at the time, Merle Bergani on drums and Richard Hathaway on electric bass. And we had a studio, our manager at the time, Bill McEwen, had this studio in Aspen, Colorado. And Steve lived up there. Steve Martin lived up there sometime. He had a place there. He's still living in LA. But he said, would you guys go in the studio one Saturday afternoon and cut a demo? So we went in there thinking it was a demo. And Steve was like, 5 feet away from me doing that whole wild and crazy guy. Seriously, I mean, performing really the song. So he sang that vocal live. And we had such a great time putting that thing together. It was so much. We cut the track. Steve sang it. Then we did these background vocals with Richard and I and Merle and Steve. And a buddy of ours, Brian Savage, that lived up there as well, put the saxophone part on later too. And we thought, okay, great demo. So they took the demo to LA and they took it to Warner Brothers Records and they said, demo? No, that's the record. That's the only gold single that I have hanging in my house because I was credited as the arranger on that tune, which I appreciated that from Steve, is King Tut.
That's fantastic. And you guys were also in, people may not know, you had a cameo role in the movie musical Paint Your Wagon.
Yes, we did. That was typecasting. We were, it was while we were still a jug band. So, I mean, I remember I played washboard and I think Jimmy Fadden played jug, Johnny on banjo, Les Thompson on mandolin, and our buddy Chris Darrow on fiddle. It was the Gold Rush era in California. So we were all these miners, and there was a scene where there was a song called Hand Me Down That Can of Beans, and we're dancing around the mud. I remember they just dumped water on the set for 2 days. So it was super nasty, and we were outside freezing cold, shot at it. Like, I think we started at 8 o'clock at night and shot till about 3 a.m. But it was Lee Marvin and Clint Eastwood and the great Gene Seberg as well. It was fun, man. We'd never done a movie before or since. So.
Well, I've been a fan of your work. I think the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band ought to be in the conversation for one of the great American bands of all time, not just the body of work, but always challenging yourself, always doing something new and different and powerful. And this new album, Dirt Does Dylan, right there among the best of your work, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Rich. I really appreciate it, man. We love these tunes and had such a blast recording them. I hope folks take to it.
Well, I think they will. It's great stuff. I'm also a huge fan of Matrices as well. So.
Oh, you man. Wish she was here. I'll tell her later,
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Jeff. We appreciate it. We wish you good luck with the music and the tour this summer. Thanks for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely, buddy. You take care.